Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's really a joy and a big privilege to come to you each and every week. We are live from Austin, Texas, so nice to be back and home. I was gone all last week out on the West Coast working with one of our clients. Great company. Love to tell you about it sometime. In fact, we'll have them on again. September 2nd it is. 22nd. Man, oh, man. We're first day of fall, as I believe it is sometime today. It's either tonight, last night, or today. It started to be, I've heard that officially, we're the last day of fall. What has happened to this year? I just got used to writing 2014 on my checks. As if I write any checks. That's the other problem. Don't write enough checks to even know what year to put in there anymore. We do everything by wire transfer. It's the trends that are going on that across all the financial markets. You look at how things have changed, and that's what we're going to be talking about in the Hot Topics segment. Now, for those of you who are dialed in, listening, expecting to hear Josh Rosner, I was looking forward to having him on. I didn't hear back from Josh, and so and we had so many requests for the roundtable discussion, and I appreciate you, our listeners, telling us how much you enjoy listening to us as we discuss the issues of the day. And there's been some serious hot news issues, hot news items that have come out recently. And so it was a good opportunity. We look forward to have Josh on at some point in time in the future. But today we're going to be having a roundtable discussion with Alice and Andy and Joe and myself. And, of course, we have on the line, I see Joe, Tony Garitano's dialed in. We also have Sam Garcia dialed in. And so there's going to be a lot to talk about because there are some real interesting news items. Did you see the news flash that Cobalt was acquired by Caliber? Well, Paul featured on his website, Paul Mollo at imfnews.com. Well, we're going to be talking about what are these trends? What is this indicative of? And we're going to be talking a lot about that in the Hot Topic segment. Before we do, we want to get in and say a big thank you to our sponsors, United Guaranty, who we had on the broadcast last week, did a great job on the broadcast. And we just want to make sure you go back and listen to that because there was some great information in there. And it was actually a well-listened-to broadcast. A lot of people downloaded that, have already downloaded that, and I encourage you, if you have not already done so, to make sure you do so. We're really pleased to have United Guaranty as our sponsor, one of the sponsors we have here. But it's one of the things I want to call your attention to today is the one-day protection with a full file submission. So if you do a full file underwriting from United Guaranty, it delivers the certainty you are hoping to get as from your mortgage insurer. And we need more certainty in the world. And what you do by submitting a loan to United Guaranty for a full file, that's the key words, full file review, means rescission protection and from the date of closing when you provide an accurate loan file information. At United Guaranty, their full file review is never an additional cost, and they're providing, get this, you listen to this, 24-hour turnaround from the most experienced MI underwriters in the industry. Unrivaled service, you can go check them out at www.ugcorp.com and put /day1 and take a look at what you can read there. Great information, and also get a hold of your regional or local UG or United Guaranty sales representative. Go check out their website. Go to our website, Lincoln on Lending, up in the upper right-hand corner. You can click on their logo. It'll take you right there. Or check out ugcorp.com/day1 to read about the day one protection for full file submission. Good stuff. Also, a special shout-out goes to Velma, Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. I got to tell you, they scrambled to do the best job I've ever seen to get information out. We thought we had Josh on. We weren't sure until the last minute he was not going to be. So they had to scramble to get out an ad. And I got to tell you, I'm just so pleased with it. Now, they left out the Profit Doctor's name. Now, they did say Profit Doctor. So, see, here's the deal about branding. If you brand yourself as a Profit Doctor so successfully, you don't even need to use your name in there. So, anyway, one little miss there. But I got to tell you, special shout-out to them. They do a fabulous job on the email marketing. It's a powerful platform, but what's even behind the platform, it's the people. And I encourage you to check them out at Velma.com. All right, lots of conferences coming up, but the big one that we're going to be at, I just got invited to speak at the New Jersey conference out at the Taj Mahal. I'm looking forward to that one. But, of course, then we have the NBA National coming up here. It's in less than a month, or is it a month out? My gosh, it's crazy. So, Joe Farr, let's get into what's going on in the markets. There is just one of those. We got another full calendar today, this week, right? Just the home sales?
Dave, this is really a light week, well, compared to the prior week and seems like week before. We just have new and existing home sales this week. This morning, existing home sales came out. A little bit less than expectation. It's a little bit below last month, not too far. It wasn't a big market mover. We are up 5 or 6 30-seconds on the day, and so we're continuing the trend that we saw on Friday just a bit. And, last week was really a pretty good week for mortgage rates. MBS prices rose about 40 basis points, and rates fell about 5. Last week was all about the Fed, as it should be. You know, the Fed is the driver of lots of rates, but you know, I'm going to get into in just a minute the impact on mortgage rates is just not what it used to be given where they are in their process, but I'll get into that. So last week the expectations for the Fed and what they would say in their guidance, forward guidance about raising short-term rates was all that drove the market, or primarily what drove the market, as you know, as people began to believe that they were going to take out some language that caused people to, the considerable time language, and replace it with more hawkish language, and that caused MBS prices to fall a little bit. But then, you know, John Hilzenrath, the writer for the Wall Street Journal, came out saying he didn't think that was going to happen. That caused rates MBS prices to improve a little bit. So when the statement actually came out with no changes, there was a small negative reaction to it, but that was fully recovered soon thereafter. And so net for the week, there was, as I said, a little improvement in prices, and the market seemed to like what the Fed said. But, you know, the Fed is now dealing with short-term rates, right? Quantitative easing was dealing with long-term rates, and specifically mortgage rates. And so all the quantitative easing announcements had a really significant effect on mortgage rates because it affected supply and demand. And as they're dealing now with, quantitative easing's coming to an end, they've announced that October is going to be the last month for purchases. That's been well telegraphed, and the market's built all that in. So it's now back down to dealing with short-term rates. And what happens in the short-term rates is going to influence inflation, right? So if they begin to raise short-term rates too soon, it could slow growth and could be positive for positive for inflation. If they wait too long, it could be negative for inflation. So from a mortgage perspective, that's what the market's going to be focused on is the policy of the Fed going to such that inflation may rise quicker than people thought and further than people thought, and if so, then it's going to be negative for mortgage rates and vice versa. So the Fed is obviously a very important component of driving rates, all rates, but less so now that it's not directly affecting the long end. Now, as soon as the Fed begins to guide on how they're going to exit or begin to sell their portfolio, that could have a big influence on mortgage rates. That'll be the next thing that the mortgage market really needs to focus on. Then the economic data that came out last week was mixed. The New York Empire State Index and the jobless claims showed improvement over the prior readings, whereas others, industrial production, Philly Fed leading indicators fell short, and housing starts fell short. Unfortunately, most of that, though, was due to multifamily units.
Correct.
Single-family units did fall, but not by much. And then inflation came out, both CPI and PPI came out. Core CPI actually fell from 1.9% on an annualized basis to 1.7%. So, you know, those who are concerned about inflation have less concern today. Of course, everyone's focused on long-term forecasted inflation, but at this point, it's still very tame. And then looking at this week, as I mentioned, it's a very light calendar with existing home sales today, new home sales tomorrow, durable orders on Thursday, And then the final look at second quarter GDP, but that's kind of old news at this point. That comes out on Friday.
Yeah.
Then we have Treasury auctions on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And, you know, that can always have an influence, a small one, but an influence on mortgage rates.
Well, it's good to – I'm looking at your website right now. What's so nice is it's just a real concise place to look at all the information. I love how you have that organized. And then also just the email updates you get throughout the week. It's not going to be much, but like – so, for example, on the existing home sales numbers, I'm looking at those. Those came in, as you said, just a little disappointing. And is that what's pushing prices up and rates down just a little bit?
You know, ordinarily, if an event comes out there and it's a miss that the market considers significant, there'll be an immediate reaction. Today at 10, yeah. MBS prices were already up 4:30 seconds. Now they're up 5:30 seconds. So, no, I can't say that the existing home sales miss was a driver of mortgage rates.
Well, it's interesting to see what drives them and then what your analysis. So you have the facts, folks. If you look at the economic events on their website, you see the calendar events, and then right above it you see the commentary and what's really going in there. So it takes a lot of the wondering what's going on out of it. Of course, you can always pick up the phone and call Joe Farr. That's a great way to go about it. His phone number is 512-637-1763. It's a direct line into him, and get a hold of Joe and take a look at this. If you're not signed up for the service, all I got to say is, why? Why? Why are you not? So anyway, to learn more, stay tuned to this message. We got Paul Mollo on the line. We teased him back in. He wasn't sure he was going to message get in, but we teased him back to come back in. He's a busy guy, man. He's tracking a lot of stories, but he's going to be on right after the break. So we'll be back right after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. We've got Paul Mollo on the line of WWW. Now, you all should know this by heart. We say it all the time. WWW what? IMFnews.com. Great place. What's going on? And he is on top. In fact, he was so busy, he said, I'm not sure I'm going to make the radio program. And I teased him and I said, we're going to be talking about M&A, one of your favorite topics. Do you want to listen? Do you want to hear what's going on? Here he is. Good to have you,
I
Paul.
Love M&A. Unfortunately,
oh,
you know,
I know
we got
you
into
do.
M&A. Boy, there was a ton of stuff last week we had on the website. You know, RPM Mortgage bought a company, and there were a couple other deals last week. Boy, there's a bunch of M&A out there, and I expect even more this year. Don't have a lot of M&A stuff. Actually, we'll have a follow-up tomorrow on RPM. I interviewed their CEO, Rob Hurt, so there will be a follow-up on the website tomorrow. There is actually a story in the Weekly, which is also on the IMF website about M&A, and we do mention some of the other deals out there, including Lou Ranieri's New Penn buying another shop, and it's a real interesting thing to watch right now, because as a lot of people know, you know, the cycle is slowing, lending is falling, and people aren't so sure about 2015. So it's going to be a really fascinating thing to watch over the next half year or so. Anyway, the lead story is about secondary market sales. Apparently, they rebounded a bit in the second quarter. That's really not surprising, but we'd like to document the numbers. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there with the remaining two quarters. The big story that broke right at press time, which is one of the reasons I was a little late, Ginny finally put out its white paper. Ginny's holding a summit in Washington, D.C. as we speak. George Brooks of our staff was at the meeting. But the white paper came out. Ted Tozer was sort of the co-author along with Michael Drain there. And basically, it's an interesting read. And he worries quite a bit about non-banks and lack of regulation of non-banks, because he's worried about Ginnie Mae servicers and lenders and issuers and all that stuff. And he basically says, listen, banks are better regulated, and the banking regulators, we basically outsource our regulation of seller servicers to the banking regulators, which is, you know, an interesting, you know,
perspective and comment. Yeah.
We're going to read the report. It's like 20 or 30 pages, and we'll be doing more on it this week in the weeklies. But there's a lot going on at that show, and there should be some interesting news coming out of that. The other big show that's going on this week is ABS East down in Miami Beach. Brandon Ivey of our staff is there, and they're talking a lot about the, you know, there's pretty good liquidity in the ABS market, but everyone, of course, is afraid of, you know, more regulations and what Reg AB2 is going to mean and all that neat stuff. So that's something we'll be watching. Brent, like I said, Brendan Ivey's here. We'll have more reports on the meeting as the week goes on. We got a story from Charles Wisniewski about all these center-right groups last week put letters to some of the key Republicans and Democrats on the Hill asking for, you know, more explanation and accountability of the GSE profit sweep, which was, you know, the amended stock agreements that happened 2 years ago. And they basically want, you know, they want more accountability on what went into that thinking, you know, why Treasury decided to sweep all the profits. They want, you know, they want to sort of get down to the nitty-gritty there about, you know, what the administration was thinking when they basically allowed the Treasury Department to scarf up all of Fannie and Freddie's profits. And as everyone knows, Fannie and Freddie are now, you know, earning together about $5 billion a quarter, which is, you know, that's no chump change. That's $20 billion
that's
a year. Yeah, so we'll get to the bottom of that as well. We have a short story about mortgage stocks. This might be obvious or not so obvious to some people. Mortgage stocks, quite frankly, have been sucking wind all year. There is an exception, by the way. The MI companies are holding up fairly well.
Yes.
But a lot of the big guys, the big three, Ocwen, NationStar, and Walter, they're all hurting. And some of the other companies are hurting, but not as bad. I mean, you know, no one's like getting... Well, I shouldn't say no one's getting clobbered. I mean, Ocwen's stock is off by 50%, and I'm sure that doesn't feel good.
No.
At least to investors. And then we got short takes. A couple things in there. One thing we pulled out of the Ginnie report, the Ginnie servicing transfers are way off this year. $60 billion so far compared to $150 billion last year. And, you know, that is tied to probably the Wells Fargo Ocwen deal, which has been on ice since February. You know, the legacy servicing market is basically frozen, but there's plenty of servicing sales out there of non-legacy stuff, and that's an interesting story, one we've been watching throughout the year. So that's all the good stuff. It's all on the website there. What are those call letters again, David?
IMFnews.com. Great source, Paul. You just do so much. You did such a great job. You broke the Cobalt being acquired by Caliber story last week.
Thank you.
I think you were the first one out with that news. And then it's really the insights behind it. You've been tracking this industry. You've been reporting on this industry for how many years now, Paul?
Not too many.
Well, it's a lot.
People will say too many. Over 20 years, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's well over 20 years. And it's the insights that you have, having tracked all these things, and it's the trends that are out there. And you're right. We're seeing so much M&A activity. In fact, we're going to be talking about a lot about that in the Hot Topics segment, is because we've never seen so many phone calls coming in to Chuck, quite frankly.
Right.
Hey,
you guys at MBS are rocking, I know. I talked to Chuck a couple weeks ago about how busy you guys are now. That's great.
It is. It's not like anything we recall seeing. Now, every cycle when it peaks feels like the biggest anytime you're going through it. But it is certainly unusual, and it's who's calling, Paul. That's probably what's so fascinating, is who's calling and for what reasons. And so I'd love to have you stick around and talk. I know you have to take a break, but if you can come back in the Hot Topic segment, be sure to press 1 when you dial back in so I see you in here.
I'd
love to have you participate in some of that, because I think it's going to be a good discussion of some of the motivations this time around. And I think you hit on some of them. But there's even more that we're hearing about, so we're going to be sharing some of those on the broadcast in the Hot Topic segment. So it's good to have you with us now. I hope to have you join us back a little bit later, my friend.
What time is that, by the way? So we
that's
so
going
I know.
To be a, yeah, it's going to be here in probably in about 15 minutes or so.
Okay,
15,
I'll call
20
back
minutes.
In.
So you go.
Alrighty.
Yeah, call back in. Love to have you. All right, man. It's good to have you with us. Folks, if you have not checked it out, it's a great resource. I'm on it all the time, imfnews.com. And then another resource that I'm always calling all the time. I'm sure when I call Al Salvi, she's going, oh, no, not again. I cannot believe he's calling me again.
I would never say that.
I know. It's well, listen, but you are just such a valuable resource of what's going on. Here's the thing that's so valuable for me as I call you, Alice. You're on top of everything. That's kind of you assume that you would because of all that you track. But it's really the commentary and being in as many shops as you are. So let's give us a quick rundown of what you have for us today. And then we'll pick up more of it in the Hot Topic segment. Give us a quick rundown.
Okay, well, to me, the biggest thing is that we had, you know, we had a bill that we've been watching called the Mortgage Choice Act, right? So this was, this House bill now, 5461, it passed the House September 16th. Now, it was a different bill, but now it's, so now we took our Mortgage Choice Act and it's blended in with four other titles. So this is what happens a lot in Congress, right? They start combining things. So the Mortgage Choice Act, if you remember, passed back in June, and this is the one that would take loan level price adjustments and broker compensation and affiliate fees out of the points and fees test for QM. And I can't believe nobody's paying attention to this. I thought this was big news. I checked the wording. It's the exact wording that is going in. It's actually it's Title 3 of this particular bill. So it passed the House the other day. It already has its Senate companion bill, and we'll be watching this. The Realtors Association is behind it. Woohoo! We always love when they're on our side because they have some nice resources. But certainly the Center for Responsible Lending is against this because they feel that this is trying to legislate around the CFPB's authority, and you know, so their voice is out there saying you can't go backwards on something that's already been set under Dodd-Frank. You know, but we're making the case for credit's been tightened, and this three-point rule is having an impact on it. And so the case for this to move forward is very consumer-focused, which, you know, a lot of folks are trying to raise their hand saying, wait a minute, don't forget. You know, and you know, it's strange to me to read things that they still want to blame the brokers for the subprime meltdown, which is completely unfair. You can't put the blame on any one part. So it's just interesting to watch this as the rhetoric, I'm sure, will begin again. But we'll be watching this closely because the fact that it's moving forward is very important and that it's buried in these other three things. Yeah, so we're watching that one for you. Today is your last day to respond to the consumer complaint proposal. What I mean by this is that the CFPB is looking to potentially publish unstructured complaint narratives. So this is when a consumer goes into their website and complains about something at your shop, and they type in the box, and they say, you know what, I talked to Sally in the consumer, in the customer service department, and she really gave me a hard time about being able to give me a modification, blah, 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 whatever the problem is. So they want to be able to edit those messages, take out personal information, but still post them. Today they get tracked factually, right? Is it a servicing problem? Is it modification? Is it origination and application? And it's a stat. I think it's very dangerous, especially as a lender, to know that my complaints from my consumers might be published in text. How do I defend that, right? That's now defending your reputation in court of public opinion. So this is a very big deal. Get your comments out there. Post today that this is a disservice to consumers, because if you check the CFPB website, they already have plenty of stories posted. They have videos of customers filing complaints. So it's not like there isn't a forum already for customers to make their peace. This is supposed to be a statistically based effort to factually measure consumer sentiment or consumer issues. And so I think that's the case that we have to make for that one. Also, the HMDA game changer, this particular proposed rule, we have time to pay attention to that, but start really taking a look at how much of an impact this is going to have on your shop. You have till October 29th to comment on that one. We have a couple other small bills that we're watching, and there's a House bill that was introduced just the other day to exempt small mortgage originators from certain licensing requirements and DTI requirements for QMs. There wasn't a summary, but anything related to changing QM, I'm all for watching. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. That's my report for today, Dave, and I'll throw it back
Lots and lots of good stuff. Can't wait to dive into some of the trends on the I've got a bunch of questions for you. In fact, we had some emails come in from listeners saying, hey, if you're going to do a roundtable, could you ask Alice this and that? So we've got some good questions right from our listeners. Alice, will we get into those? That's so good. Well, it's always good to have you. We've got on the phone Sam Garcia and Tony Garitano. We're going to take Tony next after the break. Looking forward to some of the commentary from both of these and their perspective of what's going on, especially with some of the M&A going on in tech world. Lots here. So we'll be right back after this brief break.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
Well, it's so good to have you here with us, and let's get on. I want to get Tony Garitano on here because when we talk about some of the things going on in technology, there's no one that has their finger on the pulse better than Tony Garitano. In fact, we were talking to the Profit Doctor just before the broadcaster at some point in time here this morning, and Andy Schell, again, for those who don't know, Andy Schell is the Profit Doctor, and he was talking about his conversation with Tony. He says, I've actually had some really good phone calls and conversations with Tony this week. So a lot going on. So let's talk about data standards, Tony. And we sit and look at, you know, they're so important, but I'm not sure everyone in our listeners really understand why data standards are so important. Good to have you on the broadcast. What you got on that?
Good to be here, David. Yeah, I did have some very interesting calls with Andy this week. I hope he got something out of them.
He did. He said he kept wanting to call you back.
Data standards, I think, are evolving, as always. But in respect to the new GFI and TIL that everyone's going to have to adopt in August of next year, data standards are going to become even more important. And I think that the industry needs to get their hands around things like MISMO and other data standards that are out there in the industry, because when you create the new forms, whether it be through your LOS or through your doc prep, you know, there are going to be new data elements. There are going to be new ways to present old data that, you know, if you're doing it manually, it's just not going to be possible. So data standards are going to be a very big topic in the mortgage industry, you know, I would say for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I can't imagine it not with the whole focus and imaging and everything going to data. Yeah, it just makes so much sense. You know, how do you know if your vendor is compliant? I mean, we have so many vendors out there. There has been some consolidation, but, you know, each of us have a vendor. So how do you know they're compliant with the latest data standards, Tony? What tips do you have for our listeners?
Well, I got some news on this morning. MISMO, for example, they used to have what they call MX compliance. And the systems used to be able to go through a screening that was done by MISMO to test if they were compliant. I got some information this morning that E-Lynx has gone through that testing and that they're resurfacing that whole program, which I think is a really great thing for the industry because, you know, MISMO is a data standard that, you know, everybody is referencing and everybody is getting behind, which I think is good. But, you know, with any data standard, you know, there has to be need for the data standard before the data standard actually comes into being. So just by that nature, the data standards themselves are always lagging. So if you can come up with a compliance seal that says your vendor is at least compliant with this version, you know, I think that would be a great thing for the industry, and more lenders should really ask for that certification, because the more lenders ask for that certification,
right,
the more vendors will seek it out. So it's really a responsibility on the part of the lenders to tell, you know, Mr. Vendor, you know, hey, this is important to me, and you need to have this certification.
Well, not only that, you, Andy and Teresa were on here in the broadcast recently talking about vendor validation, and it's not only you need to ask, you need to make sure they're doing it. It's not just I hope they are, or what version they have. If you come up with an answer like that when the CFPB is in your office, you go, that's not a good answer for you to put out to a regulator if they're sitting there asking you about how do you know your vendor's compliant. You got to ask the question. And for those that did not listen to that broadcast, go back and listen to it. It was really good. Tony, what are your thoughts on the M&A area? I just would love to get some of your view with everything happening with mergers and acquisitions. Very significant. Tony, did I lose you?
I can still hear you, Dave. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. Yeah, no, I didn't hear you there for a bit. Well, what's your thoughts on some of it? Are we going to see a continued roll-up? Is it really going to come down to a handful of vendors that we're going to be working with? Are you seeing a new crop come in?
You know, I'm not really seeing a bunch of new vendors, Dave. I think that what you're seeing, you know, are roll-ups, and that is probably going to continue to happen throughout, you know, the rest of this year and into next year. Because I think what happened was, you know, when you are in a unregulated space, for example, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for smaller companies to come in with a new technology or a slightly new way of doing things. You know, they get one or two clients and they're fine financially.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just not the case in industries that are more regulated.
Yeah.
Because
that's,
now
that's
the vendors are having to spend more money just keeping their systems up. So, you know, having a small shop, you know, with one or two clients or even a handful of clients, you know, while that used to make you very successful in the past, you just can't be successful at that anymore. So I think you will continue to see vendors consolidate.
That's good. Well, I appreciate your perspective on that. Appreciate you taking a few minutes to dial in. Thank you so much. Very good.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, you betcha, bud. And let's get over to Sam and then the Profit Doctor. Sam, I'm looking at your website. Again, you've got some great information out there as well. Let's take a few moments to chat about some of the things out there. I'd love the headline here. You have plenty of evidence that the U.S. countrywide lied. Evidence that the countrywide lied.
Yeah, and I think that really that's probably to be expected at any time a judgment like that's overturned, or not overturned, but that comes out and somebody wants to overturn it like B of A does. You're going to have the U.S. come in and say, no, wait a minute, you know, we've done our job here. But, you know, along the lines of the acquisitions you were talking about and the Caliber Cobalt deal, we came up with some numbers here that show that basically, Caliber did $8.4 billion in volume last year, and Cobalt did quite a bit itself also. But between the two, it's $4 billion for Cobalt and $8.4 billion for Caliber. That's going to create a top 17 lender. So that's an interesting advancement. And the other thing is that as we saw last year or last week at the end of the week, there was another merger that was announced that I didn't hear you mention, but it was Guild Mortgage purchasing Comstock.
Yes.
And
yes.
Comstock, we tracked in the last 7 years, they themselves have purchased five companies or merged with or acquired five companies. So it's kind of interesting that now they're becoming acquired. But, you know, along those lines, we've seen in the past that some of these mergers are occurring because maybe one company services and the other one that's being acquired only originates. So that creates quite a new asset for the company that's acquiring, because all of a sudden they've got this much more paper that they can start servicing. And the other thing is, of course, that you can't really grow so much through natural growth as far as, you know, expanding originations and so forth. So you really have to do it through acquisitions. And, of course, you get economies of scale as you get into there, too.
Yeah, I think that's where we're really starting to see that, and I can't wait to get into that discussion more so, because I think that was one that I'm glad you brought up, because Guild is very much one of the ones that's going to, I think, be on the acquiring mode. They've had a great investor, they got a good management team, and they themselves are a leveraged buyout and of the previous owner, and it was one of the more successful ones. And I wonder if we're going to see some of those kind of transactions in the future. What's some of the other things that you would want our listeners to be really dialed into? You've got a lot of great information up here on your website.
Well, you know, one of them is kind of a spectacular news headline. We covered three different New Jersey mortgage fraud cases in one story, and that was interesting because one of them, the defendant was a former mayor in New Jersey. The other one, the defendant is a Real Housewives of New Jersey. The third one even had a little bit of an interesting, you know, case is involved in, you know, was another high profile type of case. Just three interesting cases coming out of New Jersey. But Jenny May's securitizations, we saw that mortgage-backed securities issuance included $908 million in jumbo securitizations last month, and that jumped up from $736 million. And so that's kind of interesting that the jumbo stuff picked up that much for Jenny.
Yeah, that's really interesting. On these lawsuits, I'm thinking about the NFL as I'm hearing you talk about all the focus on, you know, domestic violence and the focus that's going on there. Now we're finding out that mortgage fraud is starting to capture some reality star TV attention, and that's just fascinating what's going on. You've got a great website here. As I look up and down all that's going on, again, I keep talking to everybody about the data that you have here. You're a subscription service, so people say, why should I pay to go get the information? It's really the data beyond the stories that I find really interesting. Let's showcase one of the data elements that you'd like our listeners to know about, that if they were subscribed to your website, what could they get on the data side?
Well, we follow the economic outlooks from the three major players that provide them, economists over at Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the Mortgage Bankers Association indicated that fourth quarter originations for purchase financing.
Yeah, I see that.
Are going to only be $137 billion. So it cut it from a month earlier when the association said there was going to be $144 billion. Otherwise, it held overall originations the same and actually, you know, boosted its refinance production for that period, you know, to make up for the purchase. So it's kind of interesting that refinances kind of came in a little stronger this year than everybody was anticipating. And
yeah,
on the other side of that is purchases kind of came in a little weaker than everybody was anticipating. I think everybody kind of expected to see a little bit more uptick in purchase activity, but that's just not been the case.
Yeah, it just hasn't been. Then we look at existing home sales that are coming in lower again today, so it's not really going to help those numbers anymore with the latest statistics that were released today. So,
well, one nice thing about that whole thing about the financing not being quite as strong as it was is that we see loan originators are working much harder to get a loan closed. And what we saw with Ellie Mae's report last month is that the productivity level, the number of, you know, the percentage of loans closed where an application was started, jumped up to 61% from 58% in July. So, you know, people are doing what they got to do to make this stuff close, and that's probably really good for borrowers who may not have gotten that kind of attention when things were real heady and, you know, going well. So it means maybe some people that wouldn't have got financing in the past might, because you got originators who are just working real hard to get it done.
That's why I love talking to you. You always have the statistics. I mean, it's stats, stats, stats. Dave, did you know this? Did you know that? You're always throwing out stats, and it's really fun to see your focus on that. And that's that. That's why we have you on here, is to really kind of continue to throw out these statistics. Check it out, folks. It's over at www.mortgagenewsdaily. Great place to go.
That's Mortgage Daily, David.
I said Mortgage Day news. I was thinking, I was just looking at the news. It's Mortgage Daily. Thank you for correcting me. Oh, my God.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can fire me. You can fire me later. MortgageDaily.com. Check it out or get a hold of Sam at 214-521-1300. You can call in there or email Sam at samgarcia@mortgagedaily.com. I was looking at the news item. You know, that's the trouble. Make sure what you keep in front of your eyes is not what you're saying, because what I'm looking at will come out my mouth sometimes and bite me. So thank you so much, Sam. Have a blessed rest of the day and week. And I encourage our listeners to dial in and check you out, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
You bet. You bet. Let's get over to the Prophet Doctor. Who happens to be? Who's the Prophet Doctor, everybody? Here's a quiz. Open book. Andy Schell, sorry that we didn't get you in, that they get mentioned on the ad there, Andy. But you're doing something I'm really excited about, and I've heard a lot of our listeners saying, this is really interesting. I'm excited to hear what the Prophet Doctor has to say. So without further ado, where do rates come from?
Things.
Why?
Two things. Let me mention about the road trip. We have the road trip still. That get a free house call from the Prophet Doctor. If you're in Little Rock, Memphis, Nashville, or Knoxville and want to have a free checkup, just let us know. Send an email to prophetdoctor@mbs-team.com.
And so we already got one in Little Rock. I already got one for you in Little Rock.
Yeah, we're getting some feedback. So it's you want to get it scheduled, give us an email. Okay, so Dave, you want to know where do rates come from? And so we've got this segment that we've launched, and we're going to be talking about the details behind what happens. And, you know, like just today on Joe's segment, he was talking about how this used to mean that, but now it means this because things are changing and the world of finance is dynamic. What you thought would happen isn't necessarily what always happens, but a lot of times it is, and there are some self-fulfilling prophecies in this that we will get to. So the point I want to keep everybody remembering about finance generally is finance seeks to understand why. In finance, we take mathematics, we take economics, we create econometrics, we take pieces of parts of everything else, and we try to make it make sense in dollars because we're the investment bankers. We're the ones that are out there figuring out how to make something make more money. So where do rates come from? I'm going to hit a couple of quick points. Dave, we can kind of talk through these a little bit. So as we talk about where do rates come from, one of the things we need to remember is that it, at the core of it, at the base of it, it is driven by open market trading of mortgage-backed securities. So kind of what does that mean? Open market trading is kind of like the old, you know, go back to the Greek markets or even the Roman markets, and people were standing there selling stuff and yelling for prices or the pits of Wall Street and actually mortgage-backed securities are traded at the Chicago Board of Trade. But there's these pits, and people are trading it like a commodity, you know, bid and ask and buy and sell. And so it's open outcry, and there's electronic trading that happens too. But basically it's open market trading. And this trading of mortgage-backed securities is instantaneous. And it's virtually continuous. I mean, given the world markets, although the markets actually do close, but there's after-hours trading. So what happens is this trading that we see happen, this open market trading of mortgage-backed securities, is the driver, the key driver behind the prices on the rate sheets that we have today. If we look at our rate sheet we have today, those rates are set by trading of mortgage-backed securities. And actually, that trading of mortgage-backed securities sets the price for not only today, but for tomorrow and the next day and the next week and the next month and the next month. Trading of mortgage-backed securities happens 2 months into the future. And that's really important to understand that, because that's how you're able to get a lock. A forward 60-day lock is because your secondary marketing department is getting a price from someone to take your loan 60 days from now. So you've got this forward activity. It's kind of like futures, but not really. It's forward trading of to-be-announced mortgage-backed securities, and that's how you get rates. Now, there's a lot more to this, and I don't want this to go on too long, Dave, but the key thing to understand, and we're going to talk about this when we look at the Caliber Cobalt transaction, is that the value of a mortgage-backed security is driven by the anticipated cash flows. So we've got this open market trading of MBS security, mortgage-backed securities, and those securities value is driven by the anticipated cash flows. And those cash flows are pretty much what they call net pass-through, or another way to think about it is it's risk-free. A risk-free cash flow, in terms at least of a payment, you're going to get your money back, and it's not. We'll talk about prepayment speed later, but these payments of interest are what drives the cash flow, and so it comes down to cash flow. M&A deals are based on past cash flows, anticipated cash flows. You know, next month, next year, next 2 years, so. We're going to get more into this. We're going to talk about that note rate on the mortgage is not the pass-through rate for the cash flows. So the cash flows that are driven by interest that come off of mortgage-backed securities is not the same rate that's on that mortgage note. And we're going to talk about what makes it different and why it's different. But for today, we just need to remember the rate sheet today on our that we got from our secondary marketing group is came from MBS trading activity, and it's going to be that activity that drives prices yesterday, today, tomorrow, and next month. So I got a little bit of homework, real quick. Quick homework assignment for people that want to learn about this stuff and really get into it. Okay, we've got to have we need to create a foundation in finance and economics for people. It really isn't that difficult. It might sound complicated, but we want to look up three things real quick for folks. So if you got time, want to learn more about this, Google discounted cash flows. You can understand a little bit about why that is and how it works. Google risk versus return. Risk versus return and the relationship between risk and return, because that affects these prices too. And lastly, we want to look at supply and demand, and that's actually economics. But we're going to look at supply and demand because we need to be able to know if there's more supply and lower demand, what happens to prices, or if there's high demand and low supply, what happens to prices. Those are all important concepts we've got to get our head around just instantly in order to understand where rates come from. So for next week, we're going to continue talking about where do rates come from, and we're going to dive deeper into the components of that mortgage payment. The interest is not only the interest. The mortgage rate's not the mortgage security rate, and we're going to talk about why.
I can't wait to get into that. A lot of people are commenting about this, and a lot of people are going, this is really good. I mean, some of it's review for some, but it's new for others. And I think it's valuable. I think this will be downloaded and listened to a lot, especially when it comes to that, many aspects of it. Let's get into the hot topic segment. This is a roundtable discussion where we want to be talking about some of the headlines that are going on. Thank you, Prophet Doctor, for bringing us that. Looking for the rest of it. Now we got to get Alice, Joe, and Andy on the line here. And we really want to zero in on what are some of the issues relay that are driving some of the M&A deals. And I want to throw out for discussion, and I want to, looking at the time we have left, I want to get thoughts from each one of you on this. So the number of things that I'm hearing about what's driving it is concerns. Paul brought this up when he was on that. He dialed back in, and we were hoping to get him on a little bit sooner, but he had to leave again. But one of the things that we're seeing that are driving M&A activity is concerns over 2015, what that may hold. But if you're concerned about 1 year, that's not enough to sell. What's combined with that is, yes, that's a factor, but it's also the age of the owners of the company and where they're at in their life cycle of that business. If they've been in business for a number of years and they've been looking for the right time to exit, go to the window, as we say, cash out their chips, take them off the table, this is one of those things where the uncertainty of 2015, increased regulations, is driving a lot of that. Now, what's more interesting is that the number of companies that are looking at this as the most opportune to get into the business. So if for those companies that are looking to exit, because they have been for some time, they're seeing this as probably one of the best times, maybe one of the last exits off the freeway, so to speak, and they're going to jump on it and take it. You know, when you're driving somewhere, you're getting gas, you go, should I get it now? And you go, I don't know how long it is before I have another exit to get gas, so let's do this. So this is one of the things that are driving factors. So I'd like to get around and start. Let's, Joe, with you've sold companies before. What's your thoughts on the M&A, and what do you think was driving some of the activity right now?
I think the need to consolidate to handle the regulatory environment is a big part of it. There are a lot of people out there who simply don't not big enough to afford the type of compliance infrastructure that you have to have. And then I think part of it, maybe not so much right now, but in the recent past, has been legacy issues. And you know, we were going to have Josh Rosner on the show today, and he was going to talk about reckless endangerment and
yeah.
the legacy issues that B of A took on and various other acquirers took on. And I just hope that those that are out there now are very conscious of the legacy issues and more often than not should be acquiring without assuming the legacy
mm-hmm.
issues that go along with prior production.
I think that's very true. I think one of the things is if the cost to regulate, to be compliant, is one factor, and it's a significant amount of money. We know that. Now, Alice, I want you to respond to this. And if you're doing 10 times the volume of a smaller company that has, and you have the same cost, it just makes sense. You're going to be able to spread that cost over a greater number of loans. And I really think that, you know, would you agree, Alice, that that's one of the things that are driving a lot of this? And when you're out there talking to people? Oops, let's see here. I thought we had Alice here. Yeah, Alice, are you there?
Yes, you do. I am here. So, yes, we do see that, you know, that some of the companies are looking at, you know, even if it's just simply to be able to acquire talent, right, that the whole idea of being able in the merger and the acquisition is to get more depth and more volume to be able to handle the regulation and be able to cover, get some more volume and to cover the cost. Not that, those two always match up. Andy's probably cringing at the way I just phrased that, but
we'll go to him.
Of course not.
Volume doesn't necessarily mean your costs are going to, you know, better cash flow, right? That's a different conversation. But you know, we see Dave too on the vendor side. If you're looking at the M&A between the vendors, it's also about being able to be more things to more customers and to have access to more customers. Customers are looking for solutions, and the whole vendor management process is such a challenge that they like the idea of a vendor that can offer multiple services. So that's another area that we're seeing.
So it's a bundling, that old bundling of services again that's driving the M&A side on the technology side. And Tony said there's going to be more of that. So that's very good. That's interesting. That's interesting because we've seen that pendulum swing back and forth. There's been bundling, and then they're going, that didn't work so well, so we unbundled and started going back to best of class, best of breed, and now we're seeing a rebundling because of the vendor management, the regulation of managing all those vendors. That's a great point, right? Great point. Andy, I'm going to go to you about this question about the economics driving some of this. I mean, you look at some of the M&A that's going on, especially the Cobalt, you know, Caliber merger, the one with it's a little bit smaller scale, but the one with Guild. What do you think are some of the economics driving some of this? Or are there economics?
First,
it must be.
Well, there's always economics. There's always cash flow. There's always wanting to dodge the bullet. Sellers have long lists of reasons, and buyers have long lists of reasons. In the case with, a Caliber, you know, they're owned by a big hedge fund, and big hedge funds have to generate a strong double-digit return every year. And sometimes you keep your investors happy by doing a big deal, even though the returns aren't there. So there's lots of reasons why things happen. It's not just, you know, it's rarely random. And the reasons don't necessarily make economic sense or financial sense, but it could be because it's about preserving cash flow. It's about preserving investors' perception. There's perception. I mean, there's just so many pieces to this. And as Chuck Klein, our partner, would say, a good M&A always starts with philosophical alignment. Because if you don't start there,
yeah.
the deal's not going to work. It doesn't matter about the money.
Yeah.
Philosophical alignment of the owners has to be in place if everybody's going to stay together. As it relates to Caliber and Cobalt, I don't think that compliance economics made any difference. I mean, they're both big enough to be able to weather compliance issues. It's $4 billion is a small one, $8 billion. You know, any time you cross past billion and a half, your infrastructure's going to be generating the returns to be able to have three or four compliance people. I don't see that as a big deal. And you never know. I mean, the Joe's point about the, I wrote down a reckless entanglement is what I like to say, because you don't know what's inside the spaghetti ball. You know, it could be a yummy, yummy meatball, or it could be some old and spoiled that's going to give you food poisoning. you've got to untangle it and figure out what's really there to really know what you got.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point, as you brought up, is the fact that that Caliber is owned by Lone Star, publicly traded hedge fund. I mean, that's huge, and I think that's a very interesting perspective, and it might give some insights on what possibly could be driving some of this. One of the things I want to get also into a bit is interest rates with the Fed. Joe, last week, talked about there was a consensus that we're going to see rates rise in 2015. That seemed to come out of that discussion, and if interest rates rise, if we truly see this upward trend of that, what do you see as the fallout? I read an article in Forbes over the weekend, and I did on Today's Mortgage Minute, the video I do every day. I talked about that over the weekend. And one of the things that Doug Duncan, I saw an article from Doug Duncan, he says, is what's interesting is a higher interest rates don't impact the housing market as much as you would think it would. There's maybe a pause when it comes to loan sales. You'll see home sales will slow just slightly for a period of time. But if the market's strong, it's going to pick up. So your thoughts on if interest rates rise, what do you think some of the consequences we can anticipate from that?
Well, first, remember, as I mentioned earlier, that the Fed's now dealing with short-term interest rates. And as they raise short-term interest rates, it's going to affect inflation. If they raise short-term interest rates at the right time, the long-term market, meaning the mortgage-backed security market, may actually like it. They may see a chance that rates would go down as the Fed begins to increase short-term rates. Now, I'm not saying that'll happen, but that's a good thing to focus on. They're really dealing with short-term rates now. You know, as far as mortgage rates, when they do rise, if they do rise, you know, you look at our rates historically, and obviously you see that they're going to go up sometime. And you know, I agree that a little bit of an increase in rates doesn't impact the housing market, but the degree to which it does obviously would. It's going to have an influence on rates in that we've seen a lot of appreciation in property. Affordability is it's still pretty good, but as rates go up, it's going to take a lot of people that were buying more house than they maybe can afford it at, you know, if they can afford a house at 4, they can't afford it at 4.5. So there'll obviously be an influence on maybe the size of houses purchased and the overall affordability is going to weigh on the number of deals that get done.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I did on Sunday's video. I talked about that, and it's very insightful. I think that you will see interest rates rise we know interest rates are going to rise on more in the long term. We've seen the yield curve, and if you could just real quickly explain the yield curve and where you see it going with the focus on the short term. Do you think we're going to have a steeper yield curve, a flatter yield curve? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's all going to be driven based on expectations for inflation. If the short end begins to rise before there's any inflationary pressure or the expectation for inflationary pressure, we're going to have a flat yield curve. If the short end does not go up soon enough to head off the expectations for inflation, we're going to have a steep yield curve. So I think it's yet to be seen, Dave. It's how long it's going to take for the Fed to do what they will do as far as raising short-term rates and where we are at that time in the cycle of economic activity and inflationary pressure.
I just had a listener shoot me a quick message and said, ask Joe if them stopping quantitative easing, the purchasing of assets in October, is that going to cause, are we going to see anything come of that? And I think you said in your segment it's already baked into everything and you're not anticipating any major effects from that.
The market focuses on surprises, and that's the worst surprise in the world. They're going to end it in October, and it's down to such a small amount that even the forces of supply and demand aren't going to have a big influence on prices at that time.
Let's run over to Alice. I'm looking at the trend lines. Alice, a number of our listeners love to hear about the trends of regulation. Are we going to continue with these kind of trend lines?
Well, you cut out right there at the very end, so I don't know if that's my phone line or not, but I know that's okay.
Yeah.
So on that, I think, we have a lot to prepare for with the new integrated disclosures, and I think a lot is from the trends. It's going to be just going to keep coming, right? We have to deal with the new disclosures. We have to deal with the new Home Mortgage Disclosure Act. If the CFPB gets their way and is able to start publishing comments, we'll have more going on in the back shop. I mean, the good news is there are systems and technology that are working to help us manage these better, but companies need to look at those solutions, and that's expense, right? So, and I want to chime in real quick on the rates rising, is that first-time home buyer market is so critical. And if rates go up, even though the overall market may not see a huge impact, we've got to get that first-time home buyer market going, and any increase in rates could change that group.
Very good observation, folks. It's so good to be with you. Appreciate you tuning in to the broadcast each and every week. Be sure to tell your friends about it. So many of you write me, and I want to say thank you. And continue to write me and bring us topics that you're wanting us to cover. We're here for you to talk about the issues that are important. Have a great rest of the week. See you back here next week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.